10,000 people here at the Jacob K. Javits Center in New York stunned. A lot of the air again taken out of what they were hoping to be a victory celebration tonight for the first woman president of the United States on hold.
Donald Trump wins Wisconsin, surpassing the 270 electoral votes he would need to take the presidency. That is what we are seeing on the screen. This is a map that is much wider red than we ever anticipated this morning. We were looking at this. He won Florida. He won Ohio. He won Pennsylvania, the great white whale of American Republican. And what we will see is, instead of this being Donald Trump being the true death knell from the Republican Party, what he's actually led tonight is a revival.
It's been what they call a historic event. But to be really historic, we have to do a great job. And I promise you that I will not let you down. We will do a great job. We will do a great job. I look very much forward to being your president. And hopefully at the end of 2 years or 3 years or 4 years or maybe even 8 years, you will say so many of you worked so hard for us. And I can only say that while the campaign is over, our work on this movement is now really just beginning.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, November 9th, 2016, 5:10 in the morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, and welcome to another business day. Welcome to a new presidency as well. President-elect Donald Trump winning over Hillary Clinton last night, as we've been reporting here on 720 WGN. You've been hearing a lot of the speeches and reaction and other aspects of this. So we're going to focus on the economy and the economic aspects of Trump presidency this morning. We'll begin first at the WGN market desk, because that tells the whole story this morning. The WGN Associated Bank market desk, Dow futures, NASDAQ futures, S&P futures had to be halted overnight, at one point down almost 800 points, now trading again off about 326 points this morning. That's about 2%. The NASDAQ off about 2%. The S&P off about 2% as well. World markets are also, all of them, lower this morning in Europe and Asia. In Europe, the DAX off almost 1%. The FTSE is off almost 2%. In Asia, the Nikkei fell 5.5%. In Hong Kong, the Shanghai off as well, the Sensex off, and the Hang Seng off as well. A lot going on. Let's tell you first about what the bottom line of this is. The market's uneasy. You know, the stock markets do not like uncertainty, and that's what happened. As we started heading into the night, share prices began tumbling as soon as Trump's lead became apparent. And at one point, as I mentioned, the Dow futures off almost 800 points. The Mexican peso also tumbled. Investors were looking for safe assets. They bid up the price of gold. This morning, Morgan Stanley has put out a note to investors telling them to stay on the sidelines during the sell-off that is likely coming today as Donald Trump becomes the next president of the United States. We're going to bring in D.L. Buss here momentarily from Michigan. This story overnight is one from the Rust Belt, from states like Michigan and Wisconsin, Illinois, the only blue state on the map in the Midwest. We'll get his reaction. But first, let's go overseas to London and ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers, who's monitoring things from there and looking at it from a global perspective.
The big money players didn't like what they were seeing. Asian stock prices turned sharply lower as investors panicked over uncertainties on trade, immigration, and geopolitical tensions. At one point, Japan's major index nosedived more than 6.1%, its largest drop in years. The Mexican peso likewise tumbled, and investors looking for safe assets bid up the price of gold. Markets are down in Europe in the early going, but not substantially. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
As we move toward the opening bell this morning at 8:30 Chicago time, here's some information that you'll need to know if you don't. You're going to hear a lot about circuit breakers probably today. These are the automatic stops that the Wall Street stock markets around the world and Wall Street put in place. Level one will happen at around 1,989 points loss. Level two at 1,861 points loss. Level three at 1,711 points. So we might see that happen this morning. It's unclear. As we've been mentioning, it looks like Dow futures have rebounded just a little bit. The story is all about the Midwest and the Rust Belt. And let's bring in Dale Buss from Michigan, who is with us regularly. He's a contributor for Brand Channel and Forbes and others as well. But he's with us this morning from the state that helped put Donald Trump over the top, Michigan. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning.
So Michigan did it. People are saying Michigan has been in play all along and was going to be a decider in all of this. Does that surprise you that Michigan was a decider?
Well, perhaps that it was a decider. Definitely knew Michigan was in play, though, from living here and then from the obvious indicator that Trump and his surrogates, Pence, his kids, you know, you name it, his housekeeper, I don't know, everybody was here in the last week and even in the last day. And, you know, even until election day, literally, Donald Trump was in Michigan telling everybody here how important the state was going to be. And I think on Fox, anyway, I saw that Pennsylvania actually put him over. And I don't even know if they still called Michigan, where he's got a 30,000 vote margin. But it's pretty clear, as you said, this is a Rust Belt story. And that's why this is an economic verdict in this election.
And the reason this is a Rust Belt story is because Donald Trump has made it clear that he will try to take the rust off the belt. Is that even possible, Dale? Is that a pipe dream at this point, or is it something that's out there in the realm of possibility?
Well, is it possible? I don't know. I guess that's a big question. I mean, I think the thing that's very clear is that Donald Trump communicated to blue-collar workers, both employed and laid off and maybe hopeful blue-collar workers, that he heard them, that he heard their plea, you know, that he understood that the fact that median income is lower than in 1999 in this country had particularly affected them. You know, every aspect of his message, the criticism of NAFTA, criticism of illegal immigration, because it's certainly an economic factor in terms of jobs, all of that was aimed at producing exactly this result, which people are going to call brilliant, because I think it was. Now, the question, as you said, is, can he really bring back American manufacturing? Because that's the obvious hope that was invested in him by all these blue-collar voters who queued up for him. I think at the very least, initially, there might be a tendency for the supply of low-wage labor, you know, as embodied in illegal immigrants, to dissipate somewhat, and that certainly bodes well for manufacturing workers. But I think what really is the possibility for him is that this could be the case of a new president being bad for business but great for the economy, and I'd be happy to explain what I mean.
On the WGN Associated Bank market desk, some stocks of local interest we're watching this morning after the election of Donald Trump overnight. Boeing stock is off this morning. So is Caterpillar. We're also seeing United Airlines stock is a little lower, and so are some other world corporations that do business around the world, like John Deere and Company. We'll continue our discussion about this on the opening bell. Still ahead, it's 520.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors unloaded shares as prospects for a Donald Trump presidency appeared to be rising. Shares tumbled across Asia, where the dollar plunged against the Japanese yen. The Mexican peso, seen as a proxy for Trump's chances of winning, has fallen 10% against the dollar. Dow futures have tumbled, and S&P futures are down. European markets opened lower after Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. Taxi drivers from around Brazil staged a protest in the capital Tuesday against the presence of Uber, demanding that it be prohibited. The decline in U.S. oil production may not be as severe as expected just a month ago. The Energy Department predicted Tuesday that domestic production will top 8.7 million barrels per day next year. Stocks ended broadly higher on Wall Street. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 521, and around the world stocks have been mostly lower overnight. Stocks, especially that deal with international trade, companies that have exposure internationally, have also been hit, from airlines to cars to IT sourcing. Companies like Ford Motor Company, which is down this morning. General Motors is off. Boeing, as I mentioned a little earlier. Dale Buss is with us from Michigan. This Rust Belt notion we were talking about, Dale, before the break, it does have a little bit of a headline here as we move into the morning, and it's becoming clear just what happened last night. I guess the notion is, do people who voted for Trump there expect all of this to happen quickly, or how is this going to work?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, as I was saying, I think this could be the case of a new president being bad for business, you know, as represented by stock prices that you're citing here, but really great for the American economy. And, you know, certainly this swoon in stocks in the U.S. and markets everywhere is because of uncertainty. It's because this is such a gobsmacking surprise to people that and obviously there are so many vested interests that bet so heavily against Trump, you know, not only in the sense of companies you mentioned that are heavily dependent on trade, but, you know, Silicon Valley, Hollywood, Wall Street, the green energy people, they all bet against him, and he's thwarting them all. So this is just a sense of bad bets playing out, I think. And I really do think this is a buying opportunity for business in general. I mean, he's going to be an extremely business-friendly administration, especially having a Republican Congress. I think this is going to be like Brexit, you know, where the concerns have pretty quickly dissipated.
Well, I don't know about that, Dale. I think you're jumping to conclusions there.
No.
Because we haven't seen the full aspects from Brexit yet. That's yet to happen, and we're starting to see some of the impacts from that. Some of the major corporations, banks, saying they're going to leave the United Kingdom. That still has to play out. And I think, you know, I don't know how you separate business from the economy. I mean, when Wall Street does badly.
Here's my meaning. And in terms of Brexit, I mean, people thought this was immediate Armageddon for Britain. That hasn't happened, and I think you'd agree that the long-term implications aren't nearly as dire is what I've been predicting. But here's what I mean. In terms of the things that used to matter to people in this country and to business, you know, a laissez-faire attitude, you know, that concept of animal spirits, could there possibly be anything better for business than a Trump victory? Maybe all this business investment that's been sitting on the sidelines for 8 years, crippling the economy, is finally going to come into play. Every CEO I talked to over the last 8 years, in one way or another, has indicated that he or she is not playing ball to the extent that they could in terms of investing in their business and creating jobs because of the albatross of the Obama administration, because of regulation, because of Obamacare, because of all the things that the Obama administration has done to strangle business. So let's get rid of Obamacare, which Trump has promised to at least try to do, and he's going to have a cooperative Congress.
Yeah, and
there's obviously going to be less regulation. And it's obviously going to be better for the energy industry and, I think, ultimately, perhaps American manufacturing.
Well, but if we have nowhere to send our cars because we don't do trade and other countries don't trade with us, that's going to be a big deal. And the economy, I'm not sure. Why would you say that the economy is an albatross? I mean, have you looked at how many jobs have been created over the last 8 years and how well?
But have you looked at how many people are still on the sidelines? Have you looked at the stagnation and income growth? I mean, Rust Belt doesn't go for Trump if some of what he's saying or much of what he's saying about it isn't true.
Well, I think
been the slowest growing economy in a recovery since World War II and probably before that.
Is there
so
not?
If you think that this is all the American economy can do, then you're someone who isn't happy to see Trump.
What concerns me is something that I heard during his speech last night, and that is how much voter anger played into what happened. And when you make angry decisions, it never comes out in a good way. And during his speech last night, as he was talking to the crowd, there was a quiet moment, and all of a sudden you hear in the background, F Obama. And so you have to wonder if this is a decision made in anger and whether that's a good decision.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of emotion in this. Do you think that he's going to take office as an angry president? I don't. This is going to play out over time, and certainly the disruption to the powers that be, you know, the Democrats, the vested interests, everybody who Trump named is going to be radical. This is an incredibly jarring event. But just as he moderated his tone and brought discipline to bear toward the end of his campaign, which I believe actually ended up helping him win, I think he's going to be doing the same thing as president. He had to throw some red meat out there in his speech because people have been waiting all night. But I think you're going to see him take office with a little bit different attitude. Look, in that meeting with the president in Mexico several weeks ago, he comported himself in a very presidential way. The Mexican president seems happy with their discussion. Trump as much as admitted that, well, all right, we're not really going to make you pay for the wall, but you kind of get the idea. I think that's kind of what we're going to get in a President Trump, you know, right away, even before he takes office. This victory is going to help him underscore the concerns that his supporters were concerned about, and it's going to give him some leverage in his attitude and in his approach. And I'm just not concerned about him shoving us off a cliff.
D.L. Buss from Michigan Today, one of the states that will likely help write the history of this election overnight, the Rust Belt and the red states that elected Donald Trump. Dale, thanks for being with us on the opening bell today, as usual. You can follow Dale on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. Just one final note on this from the state-run newspaper in China this morning, of all places. An editorial, American Politics, it says, is hurting U.S. competitiveness and undermining traditional values. That from the Chinese U.S. People's Daily on the U.S. election. Obviously, take that with a grain of salt. It is a Chinese state-run newspaper.
From ABC News, tech trends ensuring cops and their body cameras are ready for action.
There have been a number of critical incidents in Chicago, in Charlotte, where the body-worn camera is not on when it needed to be.
Many police departments have their officers keep body cams in a standby mode, requiring them to hit record when they're about to engage a suspect.
The officer's not always going to have time and not always going to know when that critical incident's going to occur.
That's Sean McCarthy. His company, Safariland, has created an activation system to alleviate the problem. A sensor links the camera's record function to the officer's holster. When the officer grabs his or her gun, the camera automatically turns on.
We don't want the officer worried too much about the body-worn camera. We want their eyes on the scene. We want them engaged in the situation.
The camera is also programmed to capture the 30 seconds leading up to the incident and stays on until the officer manually turns it off.
It ensures that the camera is on in critical incidents.
With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 5:39 now, as we continue with our post-election edition of the opening bell. We're watching the world markets very closely. As you know, overnight, some of the markets had to be halted, trading halted overnight. Some of the losses have pared back. At one point, Dow futures off nearly 800, now off more than 400 as we head toward the opening bell. Indices all around the globe have suffered major losses overnight. It is a story that will continue to play out as we move through the morning. But we want to sort of transition. We had a regular show sort of planned for you today. I wanted to talk about a couple of issues. We wanted to talk about a new Veterans Day study about hiring veterans. Michael Irwin is the head of Career Builders News and PR Department, one of the experts at Career Builder. He's with us this morning here on the opening bell. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. I know that you and I have communicated on Twitter. It's finally nice to sort of meet you, even though it's over the telephone. But, you know, I know Career Builder has been also watching this election very closely. I saw a story you guys had on your blog earlier this week about how people were getting into arguments at work and how it wasn't really good for the workplace. What is this, if we could talk about this just for a little bit, what does this foretell for the workplace?
Well, I think today will be very interesting in workplaces across the country, not just here in Chicago. I think that there was a lot of passion on both sides. A lot of people were very passionate about their candidates, and it's built into the workplace more than it has in past elections. I think that when you look at the stock market this morning, employers are really going to be watching that, and I think it's going to have some sort of impact on hiring for the rest of the year and bleeding into the new year as well.
We're also seeing that this possibly could impact the Federal Reserve's decision, some indication that maybe that December rate hike is off the table too. But, you know, the question, we were having a conversation with Dale from Michigan earlier about how people are sort of upset about jobs leaving this country. You deal with this on a daily basis. We could have been in a worse position as we were 8 years ago. What is the status of jobs? Is it really that bad?
You know, it really isn't that bad, and that's why you didn't hear a lot about it through the end of the election. The unemployment rate is much slower than when Obama took office 8 years ago. Jobs are back. You can pretty much find a job in any industry that you're looking at. Unfortunately, and what we found also in our veteran survey is a lot of the skills that people have today are not matching up with the job, and we need to do something to close that skills gap. Sometimes, though, it just isn't a skills gap, it's an information gap. So we need to get the information out to people that if you have X, Y, and Z, you're going to fit into ABC. And unfortunately, we're not doing a good job of doing that. I think that, you know, the market today is possibly going to spook some employees. Employers, with their hiring, but I think that we will be okay. We will get there. Hiring is strong. Employers still have to stay at the table.
Veterans Day is coming up this week. This is a timely issue. Veterans have always had, it seems, trouble finding work, even though some employers are better than others about hiring veterans. What were the headlines from your study?
Well, what we found was 50% of veterans say that they are satisfied and like the jobs they're doing, but that number has slipped. And what that tells us is, you know, all these great programs that we started years ago to get veterans back to work are working. Unfortunately, we've put veterans into positions that aren't challenging them or aren't using their skills. So now it's up to, you know, employers and the government to figure out how do we get them to that next level. We just don't want veterans to have a job. We want them to have a career. And this survey is really telling us that we need to start doing that.
There, because some of these veterans, many of these veterans have highly skilled experience levels, do they not?
They really do. And you know, veterans, when you look at hiring, if there were two equal candidates and one was a veteran, 68% of employers say that they would go to the veteran because the veteran has so much training that we don't have in the civilian workforce, and they come with integrity, discipline, they can work as a team. Those are everything that we want into the workplace. Unfortunately, some of the military skills are not transitioning into the skills that are needed for employers right now. So we really have to do a better job of reskilling those veterans and making sure that they're just not working, but they're providing for their family and providing for their future.
What are some of the solutions, Michael, to help with that? Is it sort of a public-private partnership? Are there going to be more training programs? Do our colleges and universities need to get involved?
I think that it's everything. I think that it's a three-prong. I think that veterans have to do their part. They have to go out and find programs that are really going to challenge them and help them get more skills. I think that employers have to work with local community colleges and come up with reskilling programs that don't break the bank and are affordable and easily accessed to veterans. I think government, too, has to focus not so much on just lowering that unemployment rate for veterans, but making sure that when they do come back, that their skills are transferable and that there are jobs available for them that will give them a future and not just a job today.
This tech aspect of jobs is a big one that's going to play out over a lot of different sectors involving a lot of different people. Are we doing enough to just train our general workforce for these high-tech jobs?
We're not. And we're finding that, again, we don't know if it's a skills gap or an information gap. A lot of people don't realize that when they go through certain training for IT, unfortunately, it's still not matching up what employers need and what manufacturers need. And technology is constantly changing. So it's really going to be a struggle for us to keep up. I hope that the new administration can set up some programs that will really encourage people to get back into those STEM jobs and we can keep up with the changing technology. But it's not an easy fix. It's not something that we're going to snap our fingers and we're going to be fixed today.
Michael Irwin, a career builder in Chicago. Thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning, Michael.
Thank you.
It's 5:46. You can find more information, obviously, at careerbuilder.com and follow them on Twitter at careerbuilder.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:50 as we continue here on the Opening Bell post-election edition on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures off 369, S&P, NASDAQ futures off as well. World markets all lower this morning. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson now to get more reaction on the election and markets in general. Orion, good morning.
Good morning, and it's an interesting morning, but from the standpoint of agriculture, which I keep reminding people is our most basic industry until they produce what we need to nourish our bodies, nothing else can happen, so let me get that plug in. But I don't think that farmers and ranchers were expecting much of anything from either candidate, because particularly in the trade area where we're so concerned about maintaining a balance of trade that's positive in agricultural products, neither candidate talked about agriculture. They virtually ignored agriculture. And so I don't think farmers and ranchers really expected much from either side in the agricultural issue. Now, the one thing I'll point out after this election, the most important appointment for the agricultural community for commodity trade in the world will be the Secretary of Agriculture, because both Clinton and Trump have said they're anti-trade agreements, and Trump particularly has said he would like to break up NAFTA. That's the North American Free Trade Agreement that was established back in the 90s and has performed extremely well for U.S., Canada, and Mexico, because trade agreements are not set up to give advantage to one country over another. As I've said many times, if it doesn't go both ways, it's not trade. And so the positive about Donald Trump is the fact that he did appoint an agricultural advisory committee, 64 members. And over the years, I think I've met and interviewed at least 50 of those 64 members, and he has some very bright people on that agricultural advisory committee who fully understand trade and its importance. But it's going to take a strong secretary to convince Donald Trump that trade agreements are beneficial to this country. Market reaction, Board of Trade, not much reaction. We're lower this morning, but yesterday we had a good jump, particularly in soybeans and corn. Corn up 7 cents a bushel, soybeans up 11.25 cents a bushel yesterday. Today we're giving some of that back. Soybeans in the overnight trade now down 8.25 cents, and December corn is down 4.25 cents. But that's not a major move, Steve, in the agricultural commodity market.
Well, you know, Orrin, you have been around. We have a promo running on our air that you've seen it all. You're certainly our go-to guy when it comes to issues like this. But, you know, we're seeing a lot of people on social media and elsewhere saying that they're a little frightened, that they're uneasy. Give us an idea. I know you're always a steady hand in this. What is your advice to folks?
Well, my advice to folks from the standpoint of agriculture, traders and producers across the country, give this one some time. And the thing that I am really going to be watching is who will he look at for his Secretary of Agriculture, because that's going to take a very strong person to stand up to Mr. Trump if he continues to talk about being anti-trade. Again, there was a lot of disappointment in the country rural that neither candidate talked about agriculture. About the only time they did was when they were in Iowa, where if you don't mention biodiesel and ethanol, you're in trouble. But there was very little attention paid to agriculture, and so that made everybody uneasy, I think, with both candidates from the standpoint of our agricultural production and trade.
So what do you expect going forward today as the markets heat up? I know the CBOE is talking a little bit about volatility. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the grain market is going to continue trading on what will be a record harvest now that it's almost all in the bin. And record harvest put downward pressure on commodity prices. Soybeans have dropped below $10 a bushel again. They go back and forth. So I don't see much reaction in live cattle futures, in lean hog futures, and in the grain market because of the election. Again, as I say, they ignored agriculture in the campaign. So what is coming now from Mr. Trump will be the critical factor.
Orrin Samuelson, always good to have you on. A steady shoulder to lean on this morning.
Thank you, sir.
It's 5:55 here on the opening bell. We want to just give you a couple of quick closing remarks. We now know that President Obama has called Donald Trump. The two had apparently had a conversation last night or early this morning on the telephone. The Associated Press is reporting that Mr. Obama called Mr. Trump as he was on stage. And then as he left, he was handed the phone. The spokesperson for Trump says the two had a very, as she described, nice talk. She said that they would meet possibly on Thursday. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest has told reporters traveling aboard Air Force One that the president was leaving his schedule open Wednesday and Thursday for a possible meeting with the president-elect on whoever that was. Again, apparently a phone call placed early this morning from President Obama to the president-elect, Donald Trump. Let's take a look real quickly here at the Associated Bank market outlook for this Wednesday. It is November 9th. 2016. And some of the things coming up for you, obviously, we'll continue to watch what's happening post-election as the markets move toward open. There are no major economic reports out today, but there are a few that we will be watching for you. One of them will be the Commerce Department releasing September wholesale trade figures at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 o'clock Chicago time. There's also a report coming out today on cancer drugs. A British cancer expert will be arguing that some of the expensive cancer drugs may not be doing what they say they're doing. All of that happening today. We'll keep watching your money throughout the morning as the Steve Cochran Show begins next. And we will be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell.